Well, Jalen Hurts is out. Nate Sudfeld is in.
And Hurts on the night, 7 of 20, 72 yards. He had 8 carries for 34 yards, 2 rushing touchdowns, and his night just might be over.
Every one of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your dad to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph to maybe even taking your own kids to their first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us all back to our own Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports Show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel, our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that is going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia. With me, of course, from his COVID bunker, it's our friend, our mentor, our guide, our Comcast Spectacor legend, and founder of the Museum of Sports, and author of the forthcoming book On Thin Ice about his time at the Spectrum with the Flyers, perhaps soon to be made into a primetime television series. Ladies and gentlemen, in the new year, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. Hi, Lou.
Well, didn't start off too well with the horrific events in Washington yesterday, which totally blew me away to the point where I didn't even want to watch the 76ers game last night. But I turned it on in the fourth quarter and it took my mind off all the horrible political stuff in a 141-136 shootout. And the 76ers are one of, if not the top defensive team in the NBA. So I think tonight's going to be a different game against those Brooklyn Nets.
Exactly. 7-1. Who'd have thunk it? Not me. I think we're not sure if we're going to have the Museum of Sports Director of Community Outreach, Susan Baxter, joining us. She apparently is still at the office. She even has an office that she goes to. I don't know how that is possible. So at any rate, she may be joining us a little bit later. Of course, we want to let you know the Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DePatcha Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And coming up in this half hour, Bustin' Balls. I just like saying that. The tell-all book on how Billie Jean King's world team tennis became a thing, thanks to legendary Philadelphia ad man Elliot Kirsten and our illustrious Lou Scheinfeld. We'll be talking about that in just a little bit. At 4:30, our regular sports memorabilia segment with our own King of Sports Collectibles and our Museum of Sports partner with the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection. Nick DePatcha Jr. will be here as usual. And you cannot miss Lou Scheinfeld's X-Rated Tales from the Spectrum. Today, remembering Ed Snyder and also another Flyers creative mind, Dobby Schiff Christoph. We'll be chatting with Lindy Snyder today, a special guest in Lou's segment. But up first, you could not have scripted a more hideous end to the Eagles season. Are there any pieces that are worth picking up to bother putting back together for next year? Well, back on the Museum of Sports Show, as soon as he mutes his microphone, we have a big welcome back to the Museum of Sports Show. Philadelphia Inquirer sports writer, Mr. Mike Sielski. Mike, make sure you unmute your mic. God bless you. Hiya, Michael. Happy New Year.
Hi, Doug. Hi, Lou. Thank you for having me. Happy New Year.
You too.
So how's the pandemic been treating you? I think the last time we talked, it was pre-pandemic. And we've had some of your colleagues on to see how it has really sort of taken away the FaceTime that oftentimes is a linchpin to coverage. And everybody is having to kind of digest the same bottlenecked Zoom, interviews, every week, which gives you, not that any great information came out of the in-person things, but you guys were able to enterprise stuff, when you had those little asides or little, sidebars and that sort of thing. How has it kind of impacted what you've been doing? Because we're going to be coming up on a year of this stuff.
It's obviously not the same, and it's not as you can't be as thorough. It's a harder slog to try to get something that's a little different from what everybody else has. Early on in the pandemic, I ended up writing a lot about things that had happened years ago. The anniversary of this, the memory of that. And then sports came back. And as you said, Doug, it was a lot of hopping on a Zoom call after a Flyers playoff game and talking to the same 3 or 4 players that everybody else was talking to. So in the meantime, I've actually been writing a book that'll be out.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, a year from now. It's about Kobe Bryant. It's going to be on the the first half of his life, basically, focusing on his career and life at Lower Merion High School. And that'll be out in January of 2022. So I've been plugging away in the writing and research for that.
Does it have a working title yet?
It does. The working title is The Rise, Kobe Bryant and the Pursuit of Immortality.
Oh, wow. And that's such an element of his timeline that I don't want to say has been forgotten about. Certainly everybody in our region knows it very well. But I think, you know, broad brush nationally, people just look at the pro career, and there's so many layers to his time here.
You're absolutely right. That's what fascinated me about the prospect of doing the book, for the very reason that you said. You know, I think the rest of the country looks at Kobe and thinks that he sprouted fully formed out of a hill in Los Angeles. And we all know that didn't happen. I wanted to focus on the early part of his life to kind of retell and flesh out that story.
Well, let us know as that's starting to come together. You have a book cover. We'd love to have you back on.
Thank you. Definitely.
To do a little bow wave on it. As you heard in the intro, you know, and I'll ask you this, are there any pieces worth picking up and putting back together? The clip we used off the top of the show was Merrill announcing that Hertz is out, Sudfeld's in, and that's going to do it. And then we've seen all this sort of weird permutations of stuff from Carson Wentz. I just didn't peg him as a guy who would do a lot of this kind of, you know, ingenue type stuff. You know, mm-hmm. he was a hardy, you know, fisherman and hunter from North Dakota, kind of a straight shooting Christian kind of guy. And he's starting to behave, you know, like a Deion Sanders. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, part of this is the regular rigmarole that players who don't want to be in a particular place use or go through to make clear that they don't want to be in a particular place. Now, you know, there's been some contradictory reports coming out of the last couple of days suggesting that Carson is open to returning. I don't see that happening. I think the report that came out last Sunday on ESPN from Chris Mortensen that said that the relationship between Carson and Doug Peterson was fractured beyond repair. Those three words suggest that this is not something that can be fixed. And it suggests there was a kind of a deliberate choosing of that vocabulary to say, hey, you know, I want out of here and I want out of here as fast as possible.
How did it go so far south so fast? Now, obviously, Wentz's performance was subpar and at the bottom of the NFL and in QBR and all that stuff. But I just sort of assumed that, you know, my theory was, and I know it's been disputed and maybe asked and answered, was, you know, he hasn't been the same since the playoff concussion. And that just, it didn't seem like his physicality was bad. It was all in his head, it seemed. But how did it go so far off the rails so quickly?
I think it's a combination of things, Doug. I think you're right in that, and I've actually written this, that I think the concussion is an underplayed factor in all of this.
I agree. I think it's, what else would explain, you know, just looking like you've just gone through electroshock, you know,
right?
When you're trying to go through your reads.
And to bring that back to what you mentioned right off the jump, it's difficult because of the pandemic and because we're only getting so much access to really get a good sense of, you know, nobody really knows how much the concussion is affecting Carson because we're not able to work the locker room. We're not able to talk to him, talk to other people.
And you can see those differences in personality, intellect, that sort of thing.
Exactly. And so I think that's part of it. I think, I do think that the entire situation with Nick Foles and then again repeating itself to a degree with Jalen Hurts has played on his mind to a degree. I think he's feeling like, you know, you keep telling me I'm the guy, and yet there's a statue of Nick Foles outside the stadium and you're drafting a quarterback in the second round. And it doesn't matter how much money you give me in a contract extension. I'm not feeling the love. You know, I think there are some quirks in Carson's personality just from talking to people around the team.
Clearly. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that the way he presents himself very, very well in public. And I actually wrote this at the time that the Eagles gave Carson that extension. That's a big factor when a franchise commits itself to a franchise quarterback. It's not just what he does on the field. It's how he presents himself in public. He's the face of your franchise. And Carson up until now had been kind of flawless to a degree in that regard. But now that he very clearly doesn't want to be here anymore, you know, we're starting to see him go through the sort of process that you see big time athletes go through. where instead of just coming out and saying it themselves, they have intermediaries or agents or other people kind of speak on their behalf. And he could very easily bury all of this and just come out and speak himself or post something on Instagram, and he hasn't done it.
One of the crazier things about the whole thing is that so many guys on the team are openly saying they were very unhappy with this move. They were out there to win. They're busting their humps, and they're questioning Peterson. Now, I've been following the Eagles since the 40s, and there's been some crazy stuff, but this is really off the charts.
Yeah, and what you're seeing there, Lou, I think is, you know, some of it is kind of a natural disconnect between the incentives of any NFL front office who would be in the situation the Eagles were in going into that game and the natural inclinations of the players. I mean, the players want to win, you know, with the exception of, you know, a couple guys here and there who just want to get the offseason started. When it's a 17-14 game in the fourth quarter, doesn't matter if it's the last game of your season, you're a competitor, you want to win. Totally understand that. The flip side of that is it is unquestionably better for the Eagles in the long term if they lose that game. It just is. It takes them from the ninth pick in the draft to the sixth pick. And as much as we want to talk about, not betraying the game and disrespecting the game and some of the things that Joe Judge, for instance, the Giants coach, said afterwards, the incentive structure in the NFL, i.e., the worse you are, the better draft pick you get, incentivizes teams to go ahead and do what the Eagles did. And I think to me, the big issue was that the Eagles mishandled how they approached that game. You know, on the one hand, 10 guys are inactive, 10 starters are inactive. On the other hand, Jalen Hurts is in that game right up until the moment where the Eagles could conceivably tie it or win it. And then they take him out.
Yeah.
And Nate Sudfeld, you know, has been their backup quarterback for 4 years. And I think part of what's happened here is that Sudfeld played so badly in that game when he came in, committed those two turnovers, that it feeds that idea that the Eagles were throwing the game. When in fact, he's been in the league 4 years. Like, you know, I don't think they put him in there thinking he was going to turn the ball over twice.
My feelings were, Mike, and I heard somebody saying at the health club the other day, if Peterson had handled it better, it would be more palatable to fans. And the thing that popped into my head was, wait a minute, Doug Peterson is projecting his own career onto Nate Sudfeld. He's sitting back because Peterson was a career backup, and he's projecting his own career to Sudfeld. Like, I never got those snaps. I never got those reps. I never got those reps. I wanted to give it to this poor guy. I almost felt like that was maybe, you know, it's revenge of the backup quarterbacks.
I think that was a factor. I think Doug is naturally sympathetic to quarterbacks and to backups in particular. But the flip side of that too, Doug, is that if you think about it, if the Eagles had started Sudfeld, if they had announced heading into the game, Nate Sudfeld's going to be our quarterback in this game, nobody would have had a problem with it ostensibly, but it would have been a more egregious example of throwing the game. I mean, Jalen Hurts is better. You know, he's the better player, and he would have played even less than he did. So, you know, these sort of questions get very murky very fast. I made a point in a column the other day, you know, to me, it's rich that the Giants are complaining about this, because back in 2004, when Eli Manning was a rookie, they were 5-4 and competing for a playoff spot. And they pulled Kurt Warner and played Eli Manning for seven games, and they lost the first six. And Eli was terrible. And there's no question that if they had stayed with Kurt Warner, they would have been playing to win, and yet they didn't. But that was acceptable. Why? And so it gets into that whole kind of murky area.
Well, I'm very upset that the Giants are upset. I mean, they were 0-5, and the Jets were 0-6.
Thank you, Louis. You're so caring.
It was 0-12 between the two of them, and I said to Merle Reese when we had him on the show, I'm almost feeling sorry for New York. And he says, never feel sorry for New York.
Well, it's
good to know when you cut Merrill, he still bleeds green. I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah, but it was so funny. I was looking at the clips to put at the top of the show. And, you know, Merrill is sitting there bundled up in his down jacket because most of the stuff they've been doing has been from a remote studio. And his body language was just so sad. You know, he had thrown in the sponge because he saw his team throw in the sponge. And you have to look at the rest of the division. You know, everybody's sort of cycling together. You know, they're lousy at the same time, and they tend to sort of, you know, ascend at the same time.
Yeah, and to me, the interesting part about that is, the Eagles, they didn't see this coming. You know what I mean? Like, they signed Wentz, and they thought they had themselves set up. And a lot of us did, too. I mean, I remember making fun of the Giants when they drafted Saquon Barkley with the number two pick, not because Saquon is a bad player. He's a great player. But because he's a running back, and they needed a quarterback. And, and you have the team in Washington that seems, you know, keeps tripping all over itself, and Dallas can't get that out of its own way. And it's like, well, the Eagles are going to rule this division forever. And here they are, and they finish in last place.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got some work ahead of them, to say the least. Yeah.
Mediocrity is contagious. Well, Mike Sielski with the Philadelphia Inquirer, can't thank you enough for being on the Museum of Sports show. Let us know when the time is right for the upcoming book, forthcoming book on Kobe Bryant, the early years, and happy to have you back on.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks, Lou.
Keep telling it like it is.
I will do my best, sir.
Take care, Michael.
Take care. Be safe.
And we want to make sure all of our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution today so you can be a part of Philly's very first sports shrine. When we come back, busting balls with legendary Philly sports ad man Elliot Kirsten when the Museum of Sports show continues here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be right back.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
The Molly Plotkin Group is the agency connecting you and your business to the greatest names in professional sports. Ron Jaworski, Vince Papale, and Ken Hitchcock are just a few Molly Plotkin Group speakers who are ready to share their stories of motivation, inspiration, and education with your team. Go to mollyplotkingroup.com to learn how to bring the skills, training, and tools that the greatest coaches and athletes use to build their teams to help you build and grow your business. To learn more, go to mollyplotkingroup.com.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Manayunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Some people think that at the Freedom's tennis matches, there's a lot of yelling and screaming. There is no yelling and screaming. Bill Cosby will clear up this misconception.
We're back on the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live on the Museum of Sports Facebook page and Talk 860. Brought to you by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialist in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Susan Baxter, trapped at the office. Wonderful that she actually has an office at which to be trapped. Our next guest has created some of the most recognizable and memorable ads and promotions in Philadelphia sports and politics, from the legendary Charlie Franks to various politicos and elections locally, regionally, nationally, to oyster crackers and tennis. He's done it all, and his work, some of it at least, now featured in the book Bustin' Balls, about the start of Billie Jean King's world team tennis team right here in Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Freedoms. Everybody give a big happy new year and welcome back to the president of Kirsten Advertising, Mr. Elliot Kirsten's with us. Hi, Elliot.
Hey there.
Good to see you. Did you have a good holiday? You're enjoying the pandemic, are you?
Oh, yeah, as much as anybody can enjoy a pandemic.
Yeah, it's my first, and I'm really, really trying to make the most of it. We heard coming out of the break there, and of course, his image is taking a hit in the last few years with his conviction on various charges, but kind of funny spots with Bill Cosby. Take us back, Elliot, to sort of the days of world team tennis. because obviously it had an identity, you know, problem, you know, but it was groundbreaking. They were changing and bending some of the conventional longstanding tennis rules. How did you sort of get involved with kind of breaking their existence to the world?
Well, I like tennis, and I knew Dick Butera, who had started the team with Billie Jean King. I knew him through politics, and I called him. I said, "You need help, and I'm going to help you. I like tennis, and I'm going to help you." And I got to be friendly with Billie Jean, and it was a great experience. I saw her a few years ago, and it was a great singer.
And tell me a little bit about, you've got that shot of Fred Stahle with his, I think, head through the old wood racket gut strings there. I'm sort of a tennis freak myself. How did you come up with that campaign, and how did it go over? Because it was pretty different for the time.
Yeah, well, I think it still is. And I had the opportunity to do a two-page ad in Philadelphia that called us Fred. And I thought it'd be wild, excuse me, to have Fred Stahle with a racket smashed over his head, and he was game for it. I met him in a studio, he, Julie Anthony, the star player, met him in a studio on a Sunday morning, and I took a racket and cut the strings and put it over his head, and he was a good sport.
Well, Jimmy Connors had sort of taken tennis from kind of the country club level and sort of, you know, proper demeanor to kind of that bad boy thing. And
yes.
To what extent did that kind of influence that campaign with Fred? Because Fred, as I recall, was toward the end of his career at that point.
Jimmy Connors wasn't, he was going to be in an initial match. And I did an ad that said Billie Jean King and the Freedoms returned. They were returning from Wimbledon. And I showed the ad to Cosby, and he started to ad lib on it. And that was the only real involvement they had with Jimmy.
So speaking of Cosby, we've got another clip that I'd like you to set up. This is the Freedoms, This Is It clip. Tell us a little bit about it. Again, it features Bill Cosby. And how much of that is scripted and how much was ad lib?
Nothing is scripted. I've got to tell you how it started. One evening, I was at Billie Jean King's house. They rented a house for her in Society Hill. And I saw a tape box that said Bill Cosby on it. I said, "Oh, what's that?" "Yeah," I said, "we like tennis." "Yeah, listen to the tape." I listened to it. I said, "Billy, do you think Bill could do some commercials for us?" She said, "Yeah, I'll call him." So she called him, and he said, "Yeah, he'll do it with you."
So excellent, excellent.
It's fascinating. I said, I called him. I said, "Bill, I'm anywhere in the country. I'll record you anywhere in the country to do commercials." And I didn't have any scripts. So he said, "I'll be in Buffalo on Saturday." So I flew up to Buffalo and went to a hotel we were staying at. And I walk in, he's holding a Gucci briefcase and smoking a cigar. And he starts to read a commercial. It was terrible. That's the worst. I said, "Well, Bill, let me show you something. Let me show you this ad. I'm doing a two-page ad in Philadelphia Magazine. And, you know, with Fred Stahle with a racket smashed over his head." And the copy was, it was a tough match, but we won. And the ad said, "You know, if you haven't seen World Team Tennis, shame on you." And he started playing off that ad. And I said, "Bill, one of the other things is people criticize the Freedoms because it's not a genteel sport. You know, they yell and scream." He puts his hand up to his chin, thinks for a second, and he says, "Hit it." I hit the record button and he starts ad-libbing. And he did that for a number of things. And I took I took everything he said. I memorized everything he said that afternoon. And then I just wrote a script, announcer Cosby, and put a jazz track under it. So this is the answer to yelling and screaming.
So I'll pause you right there, Elliot. Brett, if you want to roll it, this is the Freedoms, This Is It script.
When you go to a Freedoms tennis match, you'll walk out saying, "What we saw was it." If you don't know what it is, Monaco tennis champion Bill Cosby will explain it to you.
Well, In sports, you know, like in basketball, when you get to the last quarter, you say, okay, this is it. In football, you get to the last quarter, you say, okay, this is it. But in the meantime, you've gone through three quarters of, well, this isn't it yet. Well, if you watch World Team Tennis, every set that's played is, this is it.
I love that. And all of that's just him vamping.
Yes, yes, yes. And the one where it's reading and cheering, he said, they're not yelling and screaming. They're not yelling and screaming. They're reading and cheering.
And I'm going to have you set up this next clip because I saw Lou do a screen shared with the cover of the book, Bustin' Balls. And that's Julie Anthony, who was a ranked player at the time. This next one, this is a video ad. And, we can't show the video, but we'll have the audio. Now, she obviously is not an actor. She, you know, how did this come about? She has a script or a prompter?
No, I was just ad-libbing. I said, why don't you talk about, you know, stand here, put the racket over your shoulder. A really unusual way to hold a tennis racket. Just put your shoulder and just talk about it. I just said, here, this is what, basically she did what I said without reading it, without learning. So she just quickly learned it and read it and just delivered it. And it's a cute spot.
All right. So, Brett, if you will roll the Freedom's Julie Anthony. This was a TV commercial, but you'll hear the audio.
When my family comes in from California, I can get them into the Spectrum free to see the tennis matches because I play for the Freedoms. You can do almost the same thing because a family of five can see the Freedoms play for less than $10. Less than $10? How can they do that? We're the top tennis team in the country.
How dear. Well, it's because of the way Lou Scheinfeld ran that place, for God's sake. The book you've got up there, Lou, and I know you've got some stuff for Elliot. Well, look at that fellow with the hair blown by unseen breezes.
This is me telling Billie Jean how to beat Bobby Riggs.
Yeah, and of course she is
saying that when he comes to the net, just drop it over his head.
And she's dozing there. It looks like
she's totally out of it. Right. I have another shot here that Elliot will like. This was Billie Jean and myself on the right. When we signed the Freedoms to play at the Spectrum, and Dick Butera is in the center, and he was the partner to Billie Jean King with the Philadelphia Freedoms, and I know that Elliot has had a lot to do with them, but I have one more shot I want to show of a very handsome young man.
Oh, my.
Back in the day, was he cute or what?
Wow, is that Elliot? Were you one of those guys? Would you like to come up to my apartment and see my etchings?
I never had Lou's courage.
Yeah, Lou always said, "Come up and see my etchings." I don't have any, but I've got some stretch marks. So, but
you've been in this business for a long time, and you're a political guru. You handled two Ronald Reagan campaigns. You handle Philadelphia politics, Pennsylvania politics, and one thing there's many things I love about you, of course, one of my dearest friends, is you like to work for underdogs. You like to take somebody who's got $2,500, no chance to win, and you raise all kinds of hell. When you took on Vince Fumo with your candidate who had practically no money, and you drove Vince Fumo crazy, and he had millions of dollars behind him. What is it? You just like the underdog?
Well, the less money you have, the more imaginative you can be.
Oh, exactly, because they have less say over the product. They're like, yeah, Elliot, that's great. That's full frontal nudity. Love it. Love it. So, and you were coming off of probably that you're the second generation of mad men and mad women. My mother and father met at BB Dino in New York in the 50s, and they were kind of that first wave. You were sort of that post psychedelia era of mad men and mad women.
Bill Burnham, correct? Wave. The Doyle Dane Burnback, the Volkswagen ads, the Polaroid, the American Airlines, and the imaginative ads back then were very inspirational. There used to be a lot of great advertising in the 60s and 70s. I don't see that much now. Everybody's uptight.
So before we go here, Lou, I don't know if you can share the screen with the cover of the book. Great book out not long ago.
I am a whiz here. Let's see, how do you do the share? And share alike. No, that's not it. And there it is, Julie Anthony, a real sweetheart, a real fine tennis player. And we don't have time, but I'm going to tell it anyway. One day out at Ed Snyder's house in Radnor, he had a couple of friends over to play tennis, a couple of guys who were very serious about their tennis. And Ed said, listen, I have a lady guest at the house. My wife has a friend, and she'd like to play with us. Do you mind? She's not very good, but we'll carry her. And these guys were grousing, oh, I don't want to play with some woman, blah, blah. Well, she starts off. She's on Ed's side. They're playing doubles, and these other two guys are on the other side of the net. And she's deliberately misserving and flubbing this and that. And they're, come on, Ed, you know, can we get somebody? And so then he says, Ed says, give her a chance. So she starts putting the ball over a little bit, and next thing you know, she's acing them. They can't see the ball.
Excellent.
She's hitting line drives into their stomachs, and then finally these guys say, what the heck? She plays like a pro, and it's that she is a pro. She plays for the Freedoms.
Hey, I got to ask you, Elliot, before we go, because obviously we're the Museum of Sports show. We talk about sports collectibles. Our next segment is going to be with Nick DiPaccio Jr. His family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection. They're our partner at the Museum of Sports. I always ask him, you know, offbeat questions like, you know, what would Elliot Kirsten's original, you know, print artwork and scripts and, you know, video and audio. Does that have any collectability? Have you sort of set aside those things or willed them to your offspring as collectibles? Have you ever explored any of that?
No, I haven't. I mean, I look at it, that's the past, it's history.
And, good Lord. Come on, Elliot. Come on now. It's a past, it's history. And just like the DiPaccio family has a $35 million collection of sports memorabilia. Yeah, it's just old stuff. Who wants that?
That's right.
I'm going to ask him about that in our next section. Well, listen, legendary Philadelphia national advertising man, Elliot Kirsten, thank you so much for being on the Museum of Sports show. And I love culling all of the clips you send over, and let us know when you got it. Maybe as you go through your treasure trove and you find some new stuff, we'll bring it back on. I love doing that sort of thing.
Great.
All right. Happy New Year. Be good. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Take care, Elliot. And right after the break, his family, as you heard me mention, has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection, and it's going to be our partner in the Museum of Sports. The latest in the collectible world from the king of collectibles, Mr. Nick DiPaccio Jr., when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in just a moment.
The Museum of Sports show is presented by DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas DiPaccio is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas DiPaccio, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Children are our future, and communities must look out for their well-being. Mission Kids Child Advocacy Center strives to achieve healing and justice for victims of child abuse by providing collaborative services, advocacy, leadership, and education. Visit missionkidscac.org to learn how you can get involved. That's missionkidscac.org.
The Molly Plotkin Group is the agency connecting you and your business to the greatest names in professional sports. Ron Jaworski, Vince Papale, and Ken Hitchcock are just a few Molly Plotkin Group speakers who are ready to share their stories of motivation, inspiration, and education with your team. Go to mollyplotkingroup.com to learn how to bring the skills, training, and tools that the greatest coaches and athletes use to build their teams to help you build and grow your business. To learn more, go to mollyplotkingroup.com.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
Oh, and our next guest here on the Museum of Sports show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live has the world's most ultimate sports memorabilia basement worth about $35 million. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. a Museum of Sports show brought to you by the DePatchy Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the experts and specialists in non-invasive treatment. We're live on the Museum of Sports and Talk 860 Facebook pages, so check us out. We're not nearly as frightening, and the night terrors will only last a day or two. Our next guest is the King of Sports Collectibles, whose family's memorabilia collection conservatively estimated at hundreds of billions of trillions of dollars. And the Museum of Sports is proud to be the future home of that wonderful collection. Please welcome to the Museum of Sports show our amazing partner, Mr. Nick DePatchy Jr. Happy New Year, Nick.
Happy New Year, Lou and Doug and Elliot.
Hey, and Elliot and Nick just met a moment ago. Elliot, of course, legendary sports ad man and politics ad man. And we played some clips, Nick. And I always like to ask, because we talked about some of the pandemic value that would be for sportscasters' scripts for games that weren't broadcast because of COVID during the shutdowns and the early going, and press credentials for events that never occurred, like the March Madness, things like that. Elliot is a hoarder, apparently, and keeps all of his ad copy and video and audio spots with Bill Cosby and all sorts of notables for the World Team Tennis and Billie Jean King. Elliot, what sort of stuff have you kept?
Well, photographs. I do have some photographs of Fred Stolle, Julie Anthony. A lot of photographs of ball players when I did Phillies Franks. You really need photographs now. They're very high quality. I have those.
And this is the original artwork that went with the magazine ads. What about some of the video spots or radio spots?
I have most of the radio spots.
Nick, what sort of market is there out there? Because we were telling Ryan Fannin, who's the play-by-play guy for the Villanova Wildcats, when he was kind of borderline crying driving back from March Madness, hold on to your scripts, hold on to your credentials. Those might be worth something. What would stuff like Elliot's stuff be worth to the right person?
To the right person, anywhere from up from $150 to like $400, $500 you could probably get for something collectible. You said you have stuff from the Philadelphia Freedom. If you have someone that's really into women's tennis or Billie Jean King and they're a fan, you could get probably $500 for something like that.
Interesting.
That's pretty cool. Elliot's doing some number crunching in his head right now. I better go inventory
but
this
like
stuff
Doug
now.
Said, you have to find the right person. And if you can find the right two people, so you got them bidding against each other. That's the key.
Well, I have some original ads from the Flyers and Spectrum, and some of those things are of value to certain people. I've had people reach out to me and say, this one gentleman found a 5-foot-high poster in his basement that was water damaged on the bottom, and it was from our first year about announcing the Spectrum, and he wanted to know if I would give him $500 for it. So I said, well, just send me a picture of it so I can see what it looks like. So I copied it and blew it up, and now I have it for nothing. No, I didn't do it. And I could have, but no, I said to them, if and when we get our museum open, I will be happy to buy it from you. But some of that stuff is very valuable, especially if you have it signed. Now, if Elliot had a shot of Billie Jean back in the tennis days and she signed it, it's worth a lot more.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you took the words out of my mouth, if Lou Scheinfeld signs the Spectrum ad, yeah, no question it's going to skyrocket in value.
I'll take 100 right now.
I was just going to say tens of dollars. I can see it ticking up right now. So, Elliot, you got to go inventory all of that stuff and get it autographed.
Right. Okay.
But what I want is a copy of the newspaper article where there's a picture of Lou eating a Pat Steaks, was it, Lou?
Of me eating a Pat Steaks or who?
I believe.
You can find that every week. I'm down there all the time. So, yeah, there are some vintage ones, yes. Yes.
Until they tell them to move along, please.
Elliot's a purist, and he doesn't like to sell things commercially. He is the originator of Philadelphia is not as bad as Philadelphians say it is. He's the originator of many, many other things that appear all over the world. And I say to him, Elliot, have you copyrighted this? Do you own this? You know, you should. And he said, I'm just glad it's out there.
Yeah,
that's very generous of you, Elliot. As you know, advertising along with journalism and acting is licensed plagiarism. So your work has probably rippled out there many, many, many times over. You may want to put the brakes on that. But Elliot, would love to have you back on with the next inventory of spots. We played some really neat spots from Elliot this week, Nick. Some of the world team tennis spots with Bill Cosby, just kind of vamping about a basic line that Elliot would create for the ad campaign. And obviously with Bill Cosby's son sort of setting from a celebrity standpoint, does that have any bearing on something like that, Nick?
Yeah, unfortunately, that has a negative bearing. If anything relating to Bill Cosby is not going to be as collectible, but Billie Jean King is a very collectible personality. She's got that kind of aura about her she transcends the sport. Yep. So if you have whatever you have of Billie Jean King, as Lou said, if you can get it autographed, I mean, that would be of tremendous value. That would definitely bring it up.
All right. So that, Elliot, that's your assignment for the next time you're on. Okay.
Jump right on it.
Yeah, really. So Nick, what's been happening to the market? Holidays, big uptick, I'm guessing, in purchasing of collectibles, both at the top, middle, and bottom end of the spectrum.
Oh yes. So a lot has been going on. A lot of the auction houses had their winter/holiday auctions, and there was a big uptick in that. And I'm sure for Christmas, many kids got from Santa certain pieces of memorabilia, whether it be jerseys or posters or photos, such as the one behind me. It's of the Eagles. That's to christen the new office. So I have a few pieces of memorabilia hanging on the wall here. So we actually did make a few purchases in one of those holiday auctions. So Lou will be happy.
Can you tell us what you got?
Yes. So we got a 1920s era Rogers Hornsby bat from the Hall of Fame second baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals. And he is famous. Obviously, he was the second best player of his era behind Babe Ruth, and played for the Gas House Gang Cardinals. And he hit .424 in a season. And I think that's considered the modern day record. Nat Lajoie might be considered. It's kind of a gray area, but the greatest second baseman of all time, in my opinion. So we have his bat, and we have a fight worn robe and trunks of Bone Crusher Smith. I don't know if you remember him.
I know that name, amazingly. Why? I have no idea.
So Bone Crusher Smith, James Bone Crusher Smith, was a heavyweight, and he upset Tim Witherspoon for the heavyweight title. And yep. Tim Witherspoon is from Philadelphia. So we got that tie-in with that. But he was a pretty exciting fighter to watch. He actually broke our friend Marvis Frazier's jaw when they fought. And Marvis is a great guy. Speaking of which, I do want to promote one thing. In March 7th, will be the fight of the century's 50th anniversary between Smokin' Joe and Ali.
Wow.
So we're going to try to do something special with that.
And remind us about that too, Nick, because it would be lovely to build a show around that. That would be absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely. And the world stopped for that event. So,
I just saw pictures yesterday of the Ali and Frazier statue that at a location that we won't divulge at the moment. That'll be part
top
of
secret.
The 50th anniversary of the fight of the century.
Right. And I was one day off on the date. It's March 8th. 1971.
I didn't want to correct you, but you young people don't care about dates or times.
All right, so we'll have to build a special anniversary show around that date, and then
I'm thinking we'll broadcast from there.
Oh,
that would be a great event.
Catered. And, I'm happy to go. Happy
like
to go.
Lou said, Lou brought up an important point when he said young people don't care. Well, that's kind of true that young people not that they don't care, but they don't know a lot about this kind of stuff. And that was world history. That wasn't just sports history. That was that stopped the planet, because at that point, the world heavyweight champion, it was like having the title of president of the United States. Everyone knew who the world champion was. Muhammad Ali was that kind of person.
Exactly. Right. Hey, Nick, before we go, what's a good entry level kind of every person type purchase on the collectibles market these days? You've hit up the rookie cards really hard. Anything else that's kind of crept into the radar?
Yeah, well, jerseys, I mean, of young players. If you could get a jersey of someone for a reasonable price. Now, someone like Drew Brees was selling for 14,000 recently, I saw. Hmm. So that's probably not for the entry level. But you could probably get someone like a promising rookie, Justin Herbert, game used football, I think, was being offered for around 500, which is, I think, pretty reasonable. If he makes the Hall of Fame, then that could be worth a lot more. And you could probably get one for actually 350 if you can haggle. But yeah, if you can get these guys when they're starting their careers, and it's always a gamble. You're gonna bank on them having great careers. But yeah, you should try to go after the younger guys.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, our Museum of Sports partner, Nick DePaccia Jr., thanks as always for your weekly advice and expertise in the world of sports memorabilia and collectibles. And we'll have to build that 50th anniversary show. Of course, then we all have to acknowledge that how old we were at that time. So, Nick, thank you so much. Be safe. We'll see you next week.
All right. Be safe, guys. Happy 2021.
Thanks, Nick. After the break, Lou's X-rated tales from the Spectrum, remembering Ed Snyder and another creative mind from the Flyers, Dobby Schiff-Christoff, with our special guest you'll see there in the box, Lindy Snyder, when the Museum of Sports Show continues here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be right back.
The Museum of Sports Show is presented by DePaci Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonamic Center. Dr. Nicholas DePaci is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas DePaci, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
The Motley Plotkin Group is the agency connecting you and your business to the greatest names in professional sports. Ron Jaworski, Vince Papale, and Ken Hitchcock are just a few Motley Plotkin Group speakers who are ready to share their stories of motivation, inspiration, and education with your team. Go to MotleyPlotkinGroup.com to learn how to bring the skills, training, and tools that the greatest coaches and athletes use to build their teams to help you build and grow your business. To learn more, go to MotleyPlotkinGroup.com.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Manny Yonk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
The spooky music means it's Lou's X-rated tales from the Spectrum time here on the Museum of Sports Show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Hard to believe it has been 4 years since we lost iconic Flyers founder Ed Snyder. And just this week, another Flyers groundbreaking creative mind, Dobby Schiff-Christoff. Lou's got a special guest joining us today for a final segment, Lindy Snyder. Lindy, thanks for being with us. Happy New Year.
Me too.
We've had so many men on, smelly athletes and has-been executives like myself. And it's just so nice to finally have a fresh face on and someone who's well-known in Philadelphia. And Lindy Snyder is zooming in from Maine. And her dad passed away. Well, his birthday was yesterday, I believe it was. He would have been 88. It's hard to say that number. And I know we all miss him, but you lost another wonderful member of your family in December, Dobby Schiff-Christoff.
And Dobby and Myrna were Ed Snyder's first wife, Myrna, twins. Myrna died in 2014, I believe, but had passed in 16. In the early days of the Flyers, we were in a bunker in South Philadelphia, a concrete bunker, and we didn't know if this team was going to make it or the Spectrum was going to stay open. There was so much turmoil going on. And almost every day, these two beautiful, wonderful, adorable, irrepressible women would come into the building. And it was hard to tell who was who. We didn't really care. They were both so sweet and beautiful, and they cheered us up. And they would go office to office. They helped decorate the offices. They helped design the uniforms for the ushers and usherettes. And they were just they were like fresh flowers every day. And it made such a difference in our lives, whether you were a janitor or an executive, a player. And one of the most important things that Dobby and Myrna did was to create a family atmosphere for the players and the players' families. It was unheard of in the National Hockey League to even care about the players before expansion, before we came in. They were like chattels. You plug them in, plug them out. And Dobby and Myrna put together a wives' lounge where the wives could go during the game and have the kids. There was food, there was TV, there were games for the kids and the players. And till this day, a lot of those players live in Philadelphia. The Broad Street Boys do walk together forever here. Lindy, what were some of your early remembrances of the Spectrum? I know you were a little girl crawling around and chasing cats and stuff, but what were some of your early remembrances?
Well, what you were talking about, I mean, I actually remember when they were designing uniforms and sort of being very involved in a lot of the back of the house, I guess you'd call it day-to-day operational issues that ultimately matter, because it definitely plays into not only the branding on the outside to the world at large, but I think internally what they contributed had so much to do with the culture, I think, of the Spectrum and then the Flyers organization. And, you know, that culture, you know, was a wonderful culture that was pervasive, you know, up until, you know, very recently, in fact. And my mom and Dobby loved to be practical jokers and play jokes on people there and switch identities so nobody knew who was who. And we used to love that, we kids. And we always were part of it. They always brought us into it. You know, I remember that we would spend our childhood in the arena. You know, after school, we went down there and that's where we did our homework. And we did literally play under the stands. That was like our playground. And our moms knew that we were safe. And they encouraged us to get to know everybody in the building. And the culture was that everyone in this building is important, whether there are people that clean the building or they're players on the ice. And for me, the family, mom and Dobby and Jerry and my dad, our family was also the players and the people that worked in the building. And I don't know, you'll remember this, Lou, but many families of multiple generations worked in the building. You'd have someone who's a security guard whose wife might be working in a concession stand. Whose kids were also somehow working in the building, and that continued on, you know, very long into the future.
And you know what, your mom and Dobby knew everybody's birthday. If somebody got married or gave birth, they sent a gift or they acknowledged it. They knew everybody's name. I mean, your dad would walk down the hall and say, "Who's that? Who's that?" And Dobby or Myrna would say, "Oh, that's Frank. That's Jim. That's Bill. That's Elaine." And everybody loved them. And it was just such a pleasure to have them coming in and out of the building. And they weren't there as dilettantes. They were there to work. They weren't paid employees, but they contributed so much. It was just wonderful. I shared a picture a couple seconds ago about in the locker room. Myrna and Dobby in the locker room with Gary Dornhofer and Don Selesky. I'm trying to get it back here.
I need some copies. Those are great photos.
Yeah. I don't know if it's on the screen now or not, but
Gary Dornhofer is cracking up at something your mother said, and Dobby's looking at Don Selesky, and it just was so wonderful to have that type of camaraderie, which was pretty well unheard of in sports in those days. So they've contributed a lot, and Dobby, I was so happy to see Dobby get her due in the Inquirer and on the internet. But she not only was a factor in the early days of the Flyers and Spectrum, but in her own career, she went on to win an Emmy producing video spots for the Olympics, I think in 1992 or sometime. And in her own right, I think she worked with you and your Lindy Skin Company. And it's just an all-around great woman. And, I miss them. I know you must miss them more. But I want to talk about your dad for a second, because he is missed. Because sometimes I just feel like I want to call him and say, hey, what do you think of this that's going on? You know, I go through his opinion, because he was so astute. Probably the brightest man I ever met in my life. And I miss being able to get his perspective.
I do, too. I have to say, especially with what happened yesterday on his birthday, would have been very interesting to get his perspective. And as you know, my dad was very sharp right up till the very end. And, you know, he imbued in us an interest in the world, you know, not just in hockey and sports in Philadelphia, but also in the world and what was going on and in politics. And, you know, his attitude was that you had to get involved.
Right.
And, you know, I think that legacy he left, especially with, you know, the Snyder Hockey, you know, the Youth Hockey Foundation, is sort of an example of that. And he felt that you couldn't just stand on the sidelines of anything and let things happen, but you had to jump in and get involved and make change, positive change, if you could. And what excites me is to be able to see that kind of legacy still live on. You know, I think he always talked about this as Snyder Hockey being, you know, his greatest accomplishment, that he could affect the lives of kids in the city. And while he died in California, all he wanted to do was come back. He thought Philadelphia was his town and these were his people. And, you know, he never, ever, ever forgot, you know, what the city gave him.
No, he wanted to come back towards the end. And it's unfortunate he didn't have an opportunity. But this was his town. He made this town. He put his money where his mouth was. He saw something that he felt had to be changed, and he went out and he did it. He started foundations. He endowed things at the University of Pennsylvania in Maryland. Like you say, he started the Snyder Hockey for Kids. He said, that's the only thing I want my name on is Snyder Hockey. He said that's my legacy for the kids and for Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's right. He wasn't into naming buildings. He wanted to do something that was far more lasting and more important than that.
Thank you so much. We can't thank you enough for sharing your remembrances. I wish we had much more time, but thank you. And for all the wonderful things your family has done for this community. And thanks for being with us on the Museum of Sports Show.
Thank you. A pleasure.
That's our time for this week. We want to thank all of our guests, Inquirer sports writer Mike Sielski, legendary sports advertising man Elliot Kirsten, and our own king of sports collectibles, Nick DiPaccia Jr. The Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DiPaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. And please make sure you have gone to themuseumofsports.org to make a contribution today and be part of Philly's Sports Shrine. We need your help now more than ever. For Lou Scheinfeld and Susan Baxter, I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Louis.
These are the good old days.
See you next week. Thanks, Lindy.